The Center for Constitutional Rights, Arnett Dickerson, the first expert witness to testify at the People's Tribunal against police brutality and misconduct, which took place in Philadelphia over this past MLK holiday weekend, made a provocative statement.
Police murders and the incidents that escalate into police murders are only the manifestations of a culture of, and you beat me to it, because what I wanted to say is a steady culture of beat down, humiliation, intimidation, a lack of accountability, and a lack of transparency.
The tribunal at which she spoke was an effort to address the problem of abuse against Philadelphia residents by police officers. Sibukwe Bambata of the Askia Coalition Against Police Brutality views the tribunal as the beginning step in a movement to change the oppressive power relationship between the police and the communities they interact with as they perform their jobs.
This is just the beginning of a process that this coalition and other forces that are willing to work with us are going to be involved in a struggle for real people's power inside this city, because this is a question of power, right? It's not a question of getting the right judges and, you know, hoping, you know, the right mayor gets election. It's a question of people's power from the ground up that we got to organize to build.
The stories of individuals' encounters with police brutality and the analysis provided by the expert witnesses invited to participate in the proceedings would be compiled by the organizers as evidence that the civil and human rights of United States citizens have regularly been violated by its law enforcement agents.
We're collecting this testimony to take to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, so that they can have this stuff on their file. We're taking it to the UN Human Rights Commission. And this question of international law is something that we need to get a grasp. We're not going to get justice from the US government as it stands, as it's constituted, right? And so we're going to have to fight for the power to implement our own justice. And in the meantime, we're going to have to take our own findings, our own legal proceedings, and let the world know what's going on to black people right inside this city.
Sibukwe recites several articles from the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide.
Deliberately inflicting on the
explicitly correlates the definitions of genocide contained in the document to the experiences of African Americans in the United States, and explains to the audience that the legal basis of the tribunal judge's decisions will be the statutes of international law. The tribunal comes in the wake of a series of police brutality incidents in Philadelphia. The most well-known is that of the assault of Askia Sabor. On September 3rd of last year, Sabor, a young African-American male, was standing outside of a Chinese restaurant in West Philadelphia when he was approached by police. And as shown on the video footage taken from the cell phone of an eyewitness to the attack that has been posted on YouTube, he was surrounded by four cops and was hit repeatedly with a club by at least one of them. Over the course of the entire video, he was either sitting, kneeling, or lying on the sidewalk. A group of individuals calling themselves the Askia Coalition Against Police Brutality began organizing protest actions against police misconduct as a response to Sabor's assault. The tribunal is the latest such action that had been in the works for some months. The attack on Askia Sabor was described as a wake-up call by Ernest Ford, another witness at the tribunal who testified to being beaten up by police.
Brother Askia is a blessing. You know what I'm saying? Because it was time for us to wake up. It was time.
Abdu Sabor, the father of Askia Sabor, testified on the stand regarding his son's September 3rd attack. With emotion, he responds to a question about the injuries that his son sustained.
My son was traumatized from the neck up. As you saw that, the cop beat him in the back, punched him, they choked him. He had six staples in his head. His left arm was broken. The traumatization to his skull was so traumatic that he has to see a neurologist. And the neurologist is the one that determines what type of treatment he needs. The other day he had to go to the hospital, Brother Sibukwe. The boy, I watched him grow up. come out of his mother's womb. He had a mole on his back and it was real hairy, and I thought that was funny. It's my son. But he had to go to the hospital and get some treatment because his back, his lower back, is messed up. He ain't gonna never be able to play baseball. He ain't gonna never be able to run with his baby boy. I don't want to see you people cry or be in pain like I am about mine, but it's not just mine, but it's anybody's. Nobody deserves to be mistreated like this.
Sabor warns of what an unchecked police force who brutalizes the public with impunity will create in Philadelphia, and offers a simple alternative to that possibility.
These cops need to be stopped. It's just like I said at city council. You can't protect these. You got to get rid of them. They're no good for the people, and they're no good for your organization called the Philadelphia Police Department. Why would you put a person out there that has a mental problem and don't like women and would bash women? Your daughters stand the chance of being beat down by a Philadelphia cop. I'm not talking about the guy that's all right. He's all right. He know who he is. But I'm talking about these young that go into these here places and get the uniform on, and he runs around brutalizing the neighborhood because he feels as though he can. When he's sitting in his car on a coffee break and somebody come along and blow his brains out, that's what's being created. Because this system is creating people to want to fight them back. You can stop it overnight. Be kind to people. What's wrong with being kind?
Another account of police brutality shared at last weekend's tribunal was that of Sahira Pollard. She recounts the abuse she experienced after a male police officer approached her parked car outside of a North Philadelphia check cashing place.
So as he went to, like, spin me around, he said, "You know what?" And he smacked me. He said, "I'm tired of you." So I said, "Oh, you smacked me. So now I'm overwhelmed. My blood is boiling." As he smacked me, I noticed his officer back up, whomever he called, because he was in the car by himself. She was a female. I wasn't irate or anything because, you know, if you're being belligerent and irate, they will get out the car and both of them will approach you. Well, she didn't see that I was causing him any harm because she never left her car. By the whole incident of us going on, she gets out the car, so he's still, like, grabbing me around. So now he has me in handcuffs. So I'm saying, "Why are you arresting me? Why are you arresting me? No, you under arrest for false identification." No, this is not the wrong identification. I'm giving you exactly what's mine. Everything says my name on here. This is who I am. So I said, "Anyway, take me to jail because you smacked me and it's on. I don't even care. Take me to jail. Take me to jail." So he's taking me to jail, and I said, "You know what? I said, you're nothing but a f***ing punk. You smacked me. I'm a woman." So I said, "You smacked me so hard, you smacked the chemo and everything off my head. I mean, come on." So now he goes in, I don't know what the f*** he's searching my car for, but he's searching my car. He looks in my car. He says, "You know what? You wanted this f***ing cell phone so bad." He picks it up off the seat. He throws it in the street. So by that time, the guy that's out there, he's like a vendor on the corner. He's like, "Yo, why you throwing her property down?" So I'm asking a female cop. I said, "Can he just pick up my phone and my wallet that he's throwing all my stuff around? Can he just pick my stuff up?" So she said, "Well, he has to ask the other cop." I said, "Excuse me, can you ask him, can you pick my stuff up?" He gets in my car. He starts my car up, pulls my car, and went over my phone. He said, "Oh, now it's a piece of shit. She don't need it." I said, "I don't need it." I said, "But you know what? Your day of reckoning will come." I said, "Take me down to jail." So when he got me down to the 17th in Montgomery, the lady said, "Can you just give us your name?" I said, "No." I said, "I don't want to talk to no body in a blue shirt. You bring a sergeant out here with a white shirt on, and I'm going to make a complaint right now."
Tahira has an appointment with Internal Affairs on Tuesday, January 18th. However, Rochelle Ballah, a 24-year veteran officer with the Philadelphia Police Department and one of the tribunal judges, asserts that the Internal Affairs Department is dysfunctional.
The internal affairs system is not operating correctly. They cannot police themselves because the whole main focus is to cover up for theirs, not for us. So we already know that. I work in the system. I watch it every day. When they want to get you, they get you. When they want to exonerate you, they cover up for you. So that system is just not operating. It's not until we all come together to consistently make a stand towards weaning out an independent, well, what they call a police themselves type group, which is ineffective in relationship to us, especially people of color.
Bilal's niece, Naima Shabazz, was brutalized by police a few days after Thanksgiving. She was gripped up, thrown to the concrete outside of her home, and tasered several times. Because her case is still in litigation, Basima Muhammad testified on Shabazz's behalf.
November 27, 2010, Naima Shabazz was brutally assaulted and tased by two undercover 22nd District Philadelphia police officers in front of her home. You heard a lot about 22nd District today, brothers and sisters. Only briefly returning to pick up a forgotten suitcase on her way to her parents' home. Shabazz thought that it was unnecessary to wake up her four sleeping young children and left her 12-year-old daughter inside the car to watch them. While in the house, Shabazz heard banging on her car window and looked outside to see an unidentified white male in a cap, dark hooded sweatshirt, and jeans attempting to open the car door. Y'all feeling me? Warning the stranger to get away from the car. White man in a black neighborhood, nighttime, knocking on windows. Woo! Warning him to get away from her car. An argument ensued, and Shabazz quickly ran back outside to ward him off. Outside, the argument continued, with the stranger only identifying himself as a police officer once he began erratically choking and pushing her backwards over her gate until her feet were lifted off the ground. As Shabazz helplessly struggled against the officer's chokehold, another plainclothes officer approached the two, throwing her face first to the ground and handcuffing her. As the first officer stepped on the back of her head from the ground, Shabazz attempted to inform the onlooking neighbors to call her father, only to be tased repeatedly while handcuffed before being arrested. At date, Naima Shabazz is still fighting charges of child endangerment and resisting arrest.
Raymond Carnation and Bill McKenna, two white former Philadelphia police officers who were terminated from their positions in 1998 after they spoke up against the racism that they witnessed in the police department, attended the tribunal as audience members. Carnation explains police brutality in very simple terms. It is the result, he says, of a lack of accountability.
Basically, what the mindset is it's been like this probably for generations before we were even here, is no accountability. You know, the officers can attack, abuse the African community, and no repercussions. You know, the politicians will stick up for them, the officers, the system will stick up for them, and that's why we're here today, that the officers know that they don't have any accountability. If they assault or you know, make up a false arrest on these individuals, there's no complications with it. And that's the thing we have to send to the politicians and send to the media and the public, is they need to be held accountable. The mayor, the commissioner has to hold these people accountable, not just one every 1,000 issues. You know, there's 1,000 issues. Maybe one officer may be disciplined at 1,000 incidents. It's just uncalled for, and that's why we need to send that message to the city.
In an effort to get the Philadelphia Police Department to take disciplinary action against those officers who beat Askia Sabor on September 3rd and to get charges against Sabor dropped, the Askia Coalition Against Police Brutality organized protest marches, led demonstrations in front of the police precincts where the police officers worked, met with members of the DA's office, and participated in the conventional court proceedings of the Philadelphia criminal justice system. Although some of Sabor's charges were dropped, he still faces at least one felony charge. And in the case of one of the police officers who participated in the beating of Sabor, all charges of wrongdoing against that officer were dropped. Gabriel Bryan of the ISCEA Coalition Against Police Brutality explains that the response from Philadelphia's criminal justice system to the coalition's calls for justice in Sabor's case led the group to pursue the organization of a tribunal.
I think one of the key things was doing our history. You know, we saw that we did everything legally right or on the right side that we were told is the good way to start out. We mobilized in the community. We held a peace walk to the actual 19th district to talk to them. We engaged in conversation with the commissioner's office, with various officers, with internal affairs. So we went all the routes that people had told us and that we organized for ourselves thought would be the proper route. But we understood also that we weren't finding the justice or receiving the justice that we knew should be had for not only ISCEA Sabor, but for Tanya Yates, Naima Shabazz, and other individuals as well. So we understood from knowing history, you know, Malcolm X and others once said that if you bring it and make it a human rights issue, you know, which is greater than just a civil right, but a human right, and present it before the United Nations in that manner, before an international body, then there could be more recognizance for change, for justice to be heard. Because at that point in time, we're taking it to the top. We're not dealing with the middlemen that can sometimes make the bureaucracy of the city and local government kind of mishandled. So we knew taking it to the very top, to the UN, would really expose it for all to see so that they had no other choice but to make the changes necessary, which meant includes firing officers, having a new way in which to train officers in our communities, and a whole really real system override so that we could have change in our neighborhoods.
Fasima Mohammed takes it to another level in calling for the organization of a new government to protect the interests of those who have historically been denied justice within this country's conventional justice system.
But what you see in here today is a new gov. What is happening in our community. The Constitution of America says if this government does not work in the best interests of you, then you have the right to do what, brothers and sisters? Set up your own government.